2020 TV show, of course, featuring Hugh Downs, who has been on with Scott Spears a few times. We're not going to have Hugh joining us on this show, even though he is a native Ohioan. You're going to get me, Adam Lepp, alive and well in the flesh, at the microphone, at the control panel, with my partner in crime, brother in broadcasting, Mr. Well, it's actually Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, or for the politically correct, Dr. Fine Person. He's a fine human being, no matter how you slice it, because this is a gentleman who is an expert on the field of presidentology, word that I've coined, history, politics, and just about everything else. We even talk about baseball, because baseball season is approaching rapidly, and other goodies on this program from time to time. Of course, not unexpectedly, Ron, we welcome you back again for another calendar year of fine radio presentations. Not surprisingly, 2020 has started off with enough stuff for us to talk about in about 10 shows.
So we'll
try to just do the highlights during this program. Not unexpectedly, things are completely crazy, controversial, possibly dangerous. But no matter how you slice it, spewing forth opinions and prognosticating about what might be happening tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, not to mention the election.
Something happened.
Quite a start to the year of 2020. But I think you'd agree, Ron, you weren't surprised that 2020 started off with some major news stories. I think we can definitely be in accord on that one.
Yes, I wanted to mention, first of all, thank you for having me on again. I wanted to mention, you mentioned Hugh Downs, and I just looked him up. He's going to be 99 on Valentine's Day. Can you believe that?
Yeah, well, still going strong, and he may be on with the Interview
with the Stars.
His wife
died in 2017. They were married 63 years. Yep. Imagine that.
Yep, Scott Spears has talked to him a few times, and maybe he'll return to our microphones as Scott talks to all kinds of celebrities of all ages. And always gets
to... trying to get Hugh Downs on for February 14th. Seriously,
might be,
if you can.
Might be kind of cool. I'm sure that the Interviewer to the Stars has a few good guests up his sleeve.
Well, mentioned it, but by February 14th, it'll be 99 Hugh Downs. Wow.
We transition from the holiday season to the midwinter of 2020. Dr. Martin Luther King Day coming up. President's Day, Washington's birthday, Lincoln's birthday, whatever they call it, because I'm not even quite sure what holiday it's called now, but that's also coming up. And, you know, for single guys like yourself and myself, Ron, Valentine's Day, which we dismiss as nothing more than an excuse to spend money on fattening candy and chocolate, buy a car for somebody, and pretend to love everybody, even if you really can't stand them. Of course, that also kind of happens during the holiday season. But anyway, Ron, you're joining us from your domicile in Boca Raton, in the Sunshine State of Florida. We've had not quite Florida-like weather here in Ohio, but it's been fairly mild, so not a bad start to the midwinter period. Of course, am I beating around the bush? Because this main news topic of the last few days is, as Donald would say, huge. It's bigly news. And
yeah, I'm concerned that I live about 30 miles from Mar-a-Lago, and I think it's a target. I'm really scared of the thought of being so close to Mar-a-Lago here. I think it's definitely a target, unfortunately.
There's been a lot of prognostications, Ron, about the aftermath of this drone killing of the Iranian general, and what kind of a price might the United States and other countries have to pay. I was reading today, Ron, that there might be some retaliation against the White House, that there might even be a bounty on Donald Trump himself. That's pretty serious stuff.
Absolutely.
Now, people are talking about World War III. Would it be a world war? Would it just be a war against Iran? Would it, if Iran were to strike, would it be just at the White House? You mentioned Mar-a-Lago. What's going through Donald Trump's mind right now? I mean, he's not just sitting there worrying about his next golf game. He's got some pretty serious issues to ponder.
I don't thinks deeply about anything. He has very little knowledge. That's what's so terrifying. And he's been playing golf every day and wasting our taxpayer money in the process. It's unbelievable. Nobody's ever golfed as much as this man.
Now, what's kind of ironic about this situation is no one in the United States would disagree that the Iranian general was a bad person. He's not somebody that we consider to be an ally. But whether or not that means that he should be eliminated, and if he were to be eliminated, how would it be done? That's an entirely
different matter. The last time we eliminated someone like this was in World War II. The Admiral, Japanese Admiral Yamamoto was shot down during World War II. But that's during World War II. But otherwise, that's never happened to have a person that high in a government being assassinated, which is what it is. So it's a reckless act, and it's going to undermine the whole world situation. It's very scary.
But the irony we need to address, because you might kind of wonder about this. Well, if he is a bad person, why is it not okay to kill him? Well, first of all, the president shouldn't go ahead and just do it so quickly. As he did. And I guess you mentioned in a Facebook thread that he has 48 hours to let Congress know, if I'm quoting that correctly.
War Powers Act, yes.
Yeah. Is it considered to be an emergency of some kind? But we want to, in this country, where we are governed by legislative bodies and the commander-in-chief, and the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military, which is part of the president's job and his title, when would it be appropriate for him to go ahead and just push the button like he did, knowing full well that this person who was eliminated was not someone by any stretch who was an ally of the United States? But again, that there are other things to consider. We don't just make these rash decisions.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, then maybe you should kill Kim Jong-un or Vladimir Putin, but he wouldn't think of doing that. The fact is, you don't do this with government leaders. You just don't, unless it's in wartime, and it's not a war.
How different would it have been if he would have consulted?
Yes, he doesn't believe in consultation, and he didn't consult with any of the Gang of Eight, the leaders of both houses, the intelligence committees. And, of course, at the same time, he was hinting at it to Mar-a-Lago guests at dinner, you know, which is crazy, but something's going to happen soon. The guy is totally out of control. He is a war danger. He's a war criminal, I consider. This is really very serious. He needs to be removed, but there's no way to remove him right now. That's the problem.
Do you think that someone like yourself, Ron, again, a very moderate Democrat or only moderately liberal. I hate to even use the L word with you. I think it's more Democrat, Republican, not liberal and conservative. Would you have been in favor of this, or maybe more in favor, or at least consider that it would be a good idea if he would have consulted with the appropriate people and they would have made that decision? But again, if they do that, it wouldn't be as surprising as it was. You don't really want to do this and let the cat out of the bag.
Well, I think if he consulted with people, including many Republicans outside of the people who are elected, I think a lot of them who are broken with him would say, do not do this. You know, and this is just Republicans. I think he's totally out of control. You don't do this kind of thing in foreign affairs. And he's being compared, you know, by many people to Hitler, really. And it's scary because he's out of control. And I think we could have a World War III situation result. And Israel would be definitely threatened as well, not just the United States. And so could Britain, France, Germany, and the whole Western alliance. And it's very, very scary.
Do you think that by ordering this strike, Ron, did Donald Trump try to avoid another 9/11? Was that on his mind?
He actually provoke another 9/11. That's what I'm worried about.
Right.
And there's some people think he wants a 9/11 so he can declare martial law, suspend the Constitution and the election. There are people worry about that. So I am concerned because the election still has to take place. And yet in history, every president in a war situation has always won re-election. And he knows that. And he has brought that up about that he thought Obama was going to do that, you know, when he was running for re-election. And he also further back talked about Bush maybe doing it. And yet now he actually has done this. He set up a situation to actually help, in theory, help promote his own re-election, assuming the American people go along with it. But historically, they have never defeated a president in wartime.
So maybe another irony is that I'm not saying Donald Trump had ulterior motives, but you're thinking it might have opposite effect. Now, I know this isn't really a fair comparison, but we look at the killing of Osama bin Laden during the Obama administration. Now, there are some obvious differences, but in your mind, Ron, as a historian, you know, and again, I'm just a goofy chemistry major, so I'm not really one who's qualified to talk about this and anything more than the superficial level that I am. How does this differ from the killing of bin Laden under the Obama administration?
Yeah, well, Osama bin Laden and also this guy Baghdadi killed a few months ago were not leaders of governments. They were leaders of terrorist groups. This guy was the second leading figure in the government. He's equivalent of the combination of Mike Pompeo and Mike Pence. It's as if Mike Pompeo or Mike Pence was being murdered by Iran. And can you imagine the reaction if that had happened? So it is different. They were not leaders of governments, those two, you know, of the two groups, ISIS and also of Al-Qaeda. This person is in the government of Iran.
So there are some similarities, but not strong ones. And we're looking at it, and that's a million-dollar question, I think, Ron, because that's one of the first things I thought. Okay, well, are we possibly avoiding something like 9/11 by doing this? Are we possibly going to cause another serious situation with loss of lives and property? But you're kind of giving the answer to that million-dollar question, which is that this person was a government official, a high-ranking one. Granted, not one who's an ally by any means, and we're not claiming that. Whereas the elimination of Osama bin Laden amounted to the elimination of the leader of a terrorist group, not a government.
And the same with Baghdadi a few months ago, the ISIS leader, same thing.
So there are differences that we do need to clarify. But either way, we're in a treacherous situation. And I'm really at a loss of what to say. One thing is being an interesting time. Something else is being a dangerous time. And you mentioned, Ron, that your domicile is less than an hour drive from Mar-a-Lago. Do you think there is a danger? Have you talked to your neighbors?
Absolutely.
Are they scared? What do you think the bottom line is with that?
I think that it's very dangerous to live in South Florida right now because of Mar-a-Lago being close by. And I think it's one of three places, along with New York City, which of course is the biggest city, and Washington, D.C., as targets because they all related to Donald Trump. So I am very worried about that. It's unlikely to be a danger in Chicago or Los Angeles or elsewhere, but I think the East Coast is in danger.
We've had a lot of talk on social media, not unexpectedly, about World War III. Is that a real possibility? Will other countries get involved? And now in the nuclear age, how dangerous could that be?
Well, Russia and China are friends with Iran. They have agreements with Iran. And, of course, the whole Middle East is in a mess. And Saudi Arabia and Israel, of course, are anti-Iran, but they may get involved to try to overcome Iran. And I think Israel is particularly, and Saudi Arabia, both in danger, and the oil supplies in the whole Middle East are in danger. This is a monstrosity to do this. It's such a big blunder, and it's going to cause lots of troubles in this decade, just as we began the new decade of the 20s. It's unbelievable, really.
Certainly, Ron, totally as someone who likes to drive his car, I mean, as you and I both in that category, we not unexpectedly saw an increase in oil prices due to this, although it wasn't really that much. And honestly, here in Ohio, gas prices have gone down a couple pennies. So I guess they're kind of waiting to see how that will affect the bottom line. Is gas about the same as it's been since this event, Ron, in your area?
No, it went up from 217 here to 249 within a day, which I think it's going to go higher now. What is yours where you are?
The best prices are in the 230s. 230s and 240s is typical. Of course, prices, every week or two, they tend to go up 30 cents or so, and then they keep going down a couple pennies every couple days. So I'm not sure if that's related to this. I don't see...
But it can be. If it continues, it will be a problem,
I don't see the prices spiking, but you don't know. I mean, with this week, it's the first full week after the holiday season, and honestly, every hour, things are likely to change. And we saw the stock market drop, although not a lot. And it had been in a bull pattern for quite a while. So the effect isn't huge. But I get the feeling we may be seeing some more major fluctuations in the coming days.
It's interesting that a war situation would help a president, but if the economy goes down, it will hurt a president running for re-election. So there's two different angles going here, where if one thing occurs, it could help him, and the other thing occurs, it could hurt him. That's what's really strange.
That's politics for you. Never a dull moment.
And also affects the candidates, how they're reacting and how they would react if they were the commander-in-chief. So it's going to be make foreign policy much more significant for the election than domestic policy.
We are speaking with our official presidentologist, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman from Florida. Lots of F's there. F for a fun time. Always a bit controversial as we transition into the midwinter time in 2020. Yes, not the TV show, not the eyesight, but yes, that is actually the year. Amazing how time flies. 20 years ago was Y2K. Pretty crazy, if I should say so myself.
Believe that, how fast time has flown. 20 years, a generation ago.
Ron is the author and of the blog, which he has published for over 11 years, theprogressiveprofessor.com, taking a look at news stories and opinion, conjecture, sometimes from a bit of a left perspective, but many of the stories are just about history and what-if scenarios, and not really slanted either way. Yesterday, on the 5th, you wrote, Trump's threat against Iran's cultural, historical, and religious sites make him a war criminal under international law. And we've talked about this before, Ron, and I'll have to ask again. I never understood the concept of international law because every country is different, not to mention different types of governments. Republic like the United States, you know, we've talked about the, I would say, infamous kind of socialism-based democracies, which are common in Northern Europe, monarchies, where the government is run day-to-day by a prime minister. Big one there, obviously, is the United Kingdom. And, of course, the controversial nature of Brexit, United Kingdom exiting from the European Union. And then
Boris Johnson, by the way, is very upset that he was not informed ahead of time by the president. So he's also alienated the allies in Europe, including the UK, right. France, and Germany.
And then we do have the more true communist nations, multiple types of government. But bottom line is, with that in mind, not to mention the Middle East, where there are so many differences between those countries and much of Western Europe and North America. What is international law, and what exactly is the violation due to all the differences in these governments? And what is the penalty for someone like a president who might violate international law? Or is it just symbolic, or is there an actual real penalty lurking for Mr. Donald?
In theory, a person who's a war criminal would be arrested and sent to The Hague in the Netherlands for trial. That's in theory. But international law, at the beginning of the 20th century, set up the idea that certain locations are not to be attacked, including historical, cultural, and religious sites, because they represent civilization's history. And that's why it's said to be there's some things you just don't do. But that's what he's threatening with some of the sites, because he has 52 sites, Trump, just as 52 Americans were held hostage in 1979, 1980, 81. And apparently a lot of them are cultural, historical, and religious sites in Iran. And that is something that's simply not supposed to occur under international law.
You write in your blog, again from yesterday, the 5th, this is kind of ironic. We think about Mitt Romney as more central, centrist of a Republican. We're familiar with him as a presidential candidate. And then Ben Sasse, who is fairly conservative, yeah, but he's an intellectual type. He has a PhD. He was a university official, so we might expect different out of him. But you're right.
Ben Sasse, I'm really surprised Ben Sasse is really a hawk on this. Wow.
Yeah, we're seeing Republicans rush to defend him, meaning Donald Trump, and his actions and utterances, including those one might think would hold back support, like Romney and, again, Ben Sasse. So, you know, birds of a feather might flock together, but sometimes they break from the party. And that's kind of what you're saying. You close with a rather strong statement. This is rather strong, Ron. This maniac is capable of declaring martial law and suspending the Constitution, and he must be stopped as a threat to American democracy and world peace and order. Those are strong words.
That's right. Yeah. And very strong, but I feel very much worried about it.
So
if we had 9/11, he might declare martial law because of it. See, Bush didn't do that, but I could see that maybe happening with him. I think it's what he would like to do because he would like to be president for life. Don't forget, he doesn't believe in term limits.
So you feel that maniac is not too strong of a word for our president?
Not with this kind of an action, I would say no. Okay. I do not think.
Just asking. I mean, you know,
very strongly he is a maniac.
Yeah. Well,
he's
certainly
a mentally ill person who should not be in the White House.
He is a divisive, controversial dude. I'll say that much.
So that's being minor.
Let's get to some lighter stories. I mean, that's a serious story. I mean, what we want to talk about it. If there's ever a political topic, that certainly should be the number one on the agenda when Ron and I get together, as it has been, and we'll. May address a few more things. The bottom line is every day things are going to change with this story, and let's hope we can all kind of get along. Well, that's probably a pipe dream, but let's at least try. At least understand we have differences and try to act like mature adults. I wish I could be confident in saying that, and that's why I do sound a little bit doubtful. But we can only hope. So in the Democratic presidential race, Ron, the primary, not even a month, the first caucus in Iowa, less than a month away. Amazing. We're going to get started with this process.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
In just a few short weeks. It seems there have been some changes. Julian Castro is no longer in the running, but you think he might be a vice presidential candidate, and I would think he certainly has his eyes on that office. And
as would Kamala Harris, yes.
Mayor Pete is no longer Mayor Pete. He's just plain old Pete because his mayoral term in South Bend, Indiana, ended at the stroke of midnight or somewhere around that time. And now he's just a private citizen. But here's a question that I keep thinking about this question, Ron, but I keep forgetting to ask you. Again, it's kind of an amusing one, but I thought you might want to put in your 2 cents worth. So you ready for the question?
Yes.
So, again, Pete, if he becomes president, would be the youngest president, the only president under age 40. You must be 35 to be president, so he would be just over the border there. Born
39
in
one day, yes.
In the 1980s, yeah. As crazy as that sounds to have a president born when I was in college. My goodness, do I seem old. But thankfully, I'm still cute, so that's okay. I don't get older. I get better. Anyway... this also came up in something I was reading about Pete. He thinks that there have previously been gay presidents. Now, we do talk about Buchanan, who certainly was not openly gay or married to another gentleman, but we're pretty confident he was of the homosexual persuasion. And of recent presidents, there have been some rumors about Mr. Obama and Mr. Clinton. We're not going to comment on that. Personally, I don't really care. And I'm all for having a president who's not an old, white, straight dude. And Pete Buttigieg is a dude. He's white, but he, well, certainly isn't old. Maybe if you're 5 years old, you think that late 30s is old. But at my age and Ron's age, he's just a youngin' as far as we're concerned. And we've talked
My oldest son.
Yeah, talked about his sexual orientation, which would also put him in a minority. So here's that $500,000 question, Ron. As you know, his husband, Chasten, took on the last name Buttigieg. Probably not a lot of Chasten Buttigieges in the world. I thought Adam Lepp was a unique name, but I think Chasten Buttigieg has me beaten.
That's funny.
Honestly, I forget what his original last name was, but let's just say that it's Smith, just for point of illustration. What do you call the former last name, Ron, of a man who marries another man and takes on his husband's last name? You wouldn't really say maiden name, because that implies being a female. So just like I've invented the word presidentologist, can you and I invent a word for the former last name of a man who marries a man and takes that other man's last name? Any suggestions on that?
Oh, my God. I'd have to have some time to think about it. I don't know. Do you have any suggestions? I haven't had time to think about
it. How about, like, stud name or bachelor name or dude name? I don't know.
That sounds clean. I thought you were going to get dirty.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe like how about this? Because I like alliterations. Stud surname. How about that? Stud surname.
That sounds good. Yes.
So we're going to go ahead and invent a word here on this first mid-morning coffee break of 2020. The equivalent of a maiden name for a man who marries another man and takes on the other man's last name would be stud surname. So I without looking at it, I don't remember what Chasten Buttigieg's last name used to be, but let's say it was Smith, just to make it easy. So
no, it's not that simple.
So Smith would be his stud surname. Until I can think of a better term, that's what it's going to have to be, my friends, and we'll just leave it at that. Let's get on to the other pressing issue related to the Democratic contenders. Did Julian Castro resign from the race, Ron, so he could support possibly Joe, possibly the aforementioned Mr. Buttigieg, and kind of lobby to be the vice president, knowing he would get the Latino votes?
I don't know if he planned it that way, because I think it's more because he ran out of money. He didn't have enough financial support or poll support, same as Kamala Harris. But I think they both are prime candidates for vice president. I think I would probably prefer him, because I think the Latino vote is crucial. I don't think that she can add as much as a person of her background as he can.
Yep. I'm not sure I'm overly enamored with either, but I would probably prefer Castro. And we talk about, again, minorities, and I wouldn't even call Latino origin much of a minority anymore, but we've never had Latino or Latina president or vice president. So, you know, we take the baby steps, and he could break that string. I wanted to mention,
I looked up Chasten's last name, Glezman, G-L-E-Z-M-A-N is his actual name, Chasten Glezman.
Good German name there, so... Chasten.
What if it's Jewish, actually? I guess not, but the M-A-N makes me think it could be Jewish, Glezman.
Yeah, it could be German-Jewish. I'm not quite sure. But whatever it is, his last name is now Buttigieg, and so Glezman would be his
Glezman.
Stud
I think it's
surname.
A better name.
Yeah, stud surname
Maybe
is the word that I have
Peter
invented.
Peter Glezman as his name instead of Peter Buttigieg.
Yeah, Peter Glezman. You know, Peter Glezman, that's a good name. It sounds like a movie star. Peter Glezman.
Yeah, it could have been Mayor Pete Glezman. He could have made himself.
Yeah, Glezman,
but I guess he didn't want to do that.
Glezman's a good name. I'm not sure why he... Why did Chasten pick the Buttigieg? Because honestly, that is a unique name. A very funny name, but really not the most attractive name. So I would... Yeah, I would personally have... If I was Pete, I would have gone with Pete... Peter Glezman. That sounds like a president's name. Interesting.
Yes, you know, it does.
You could always say rated PG, because that would be his initials. He's rated PG. Which would be president, pretty good president. So I guess if you're listening and you want to, you know, send me an email, adam@wwgh1071.com, enlighten me as to why did Chasten take your name instead of the other way around. Now, sometimes in a heterosexual couple, the male will take the female's name or they'll hyphenate. It's also common for same-sex couples to hyphenate the name. But in this case, Chasten just became a Buttigieg. And again, his surname of Glezman is no longer a part of his legal name or his signature. But maybe that'll come up sometime in future discussions with the aforementioned former mayor, Pete. Now, Pete is no longer the mayor of South Bend, and that means he can spend more time concentrating on the election. But there was this controversy with the police chief, Ron. Is that gonna dog him in the election? Do you think maybe it would be better if he were still mayor? He could kind of answer to that, or can he put it behind him and concentrate
on... Well, this way he doesn't have the burden of having to answer about what he's doing in South Bend, because it's done already. So it's probably better that he's retired from it. I wanted to mention, I looked up Chaz, and they say he does improv comedy and is much more extroverted than his shy partner, Pete. That's amazing, because Pete doesn't seem exactly shy, but according to this, he's shy, this article says, and Chaz is a comedian and is hilarious and extroverted.
Yeah,
wow.
Well, like me, you know, in front of a microphone, in front of people, I don't shut up. I'm the opposite. I like talking in front of people. I'm not afraid of that at all, but in a person-to-person among a lot of people, I am shy and awkward. But that's kind of typical of a lot of intellectual people. I think me and Pete probably are similar in many ways. It could be a case, where an intellectual-type person who is kind of shy and awkward gets in front of people, in front of a microphone, in front of the TV camera, and isn't worried about that shyness, that he's come out of his shell. But that would probably make them, I think, very compatible, is that the in-person persona and the public persona of Pete are very different. And with Chasten, it might be the other way around, because he does seem kind of quiet and in the group setting and person to person, but in front of other people, he does act totally different. And that could certainly make for an interesting study. You know, we talk about presidential marriages, Ron, the very nuclear family of Obama, of President Barack Obama and his wife, Michelle. Talk about Donald Trump having a bit of a playboy image. And is he still acting that way despite his very beautiful and much younger wife? Who knows? You know, the Clintons, was it a marriage of convenience? Do they really love each other? I mean, who knows? So I think if Buttigieg were to ascend to the presidency, no doubt there will be a lot of talk in the tabloids, TV shows, and radio programs like this about their marriage. And I guess nothing else, it's kind of fun. And you're interested in the presidents as people. But it also allows us not to have to focus all the time on some of the serious, important issues. That it's okay. Presidents are still human beings. And it's good to look at them that way and see what their quirks are and kind of what their life is like outside of the Oval Office.
And it'd be interesting to have an outgoing, hilarious first gentleman, as you know, with the president. I would be. I'm just learning this now as I'm looking this up as I'm talking to you. He's actually quite an outgoing person and very social and funny. So probably we'll learn a lot more about him, of course, if he goes further.
Yeah, he would be unique in so many different ways. He would be the first male. First person, he'd want to be called the first gentleman. So the first person who is of the male persuasion. He wouldn't actually be the youngest, as we learned that Mrs. Cleveland and Mrs. Kennedy were a little younger than Chasten would be, even though he'd be in his early 30s. Yeah. He'd only be the third youngest. And again, a bit of a comedian, teacher, you know, a bit like Karen Pence, the second lady, although their political leanings are certainly very different, to put it mildly. Yeah. Karen also just isn't that interesting of a person. I mean, I'm sure she has many, many fine qualities. You know, I do like to discuss her looks. She's very plain looking, but that's okay. So her political beliefs are certainly about the type of marriage that Pete and Chasten have. Certainly her beliefs don't coincide with your beliefs, Ron, or mine. And that makes for some interesting discussions. So we would have quite a difference in the first and second families if Buttigieg were to become president. You know, Melania, a bit of a divisive person, but we agree that she is a good mother. I mean, she's very attractive. You know, she's smart in that she speaks many languages, but you kind of wonder about her sometime. And so if we were to have, for example, as we've kind of talked about, a possibility of Dr. Jill Biden being first or second lady and Chasten Buttigieg being first or second gentleman, that would be quite a change from what we have currently. And that would certainly...
Yes, I wanted to mention, Chaz Glessman also was raised Roman Catholic. So he's not Jewish. He was raised Roman Catholic in Michigan. And also, he met him online and spoke over FaceTime before they had their first real date. That's interesting. That's modern times.
Well, isn't that romantic?
Yes, and he was also homeless for a while.
Yeah, they have a...
He was homeless for a while. Apparently, he was kicked out by his family, and so they accepted him. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, the joke's on his family right now because he might end up being the first gentleman, and he was already married to the mayor. So, you know, interesting life story, which will make for a lot of fodder in TV and radio shows and tabloids and whatever the case is. They're an interesting couple, and I...
It's more of the introvert. I find that hard to believe.
And
I don't know if I believe that.
Applaud them for having a marriage that's in the spotlight, with Pete as being mayor and now possibly being president or vice president. Chasten's past history, and now again, being a good teacher in northern Indiana. An interesting couple, to put it mildly. And that would, I think, add to the charisma of their reign as possibly being in the White House or in the vice presidential mansion. In terms of Castro, you know, like Buttigieg, Ron, he currently doesn't officially have a job. However, I think he will end up having a political office of some kind or a cabinet appointment. I think we probably can agree that if we have a Democratic president and he isn't vice president, that Castro will certainly have a cabinet position of some kind. Can we pretty much agree on that one?
Yes. It'd be a very interesting possibility for the future, yes.
Do you think there's anything in particular he might be qualified for, being multicultural of sorts. Again, same thing we might have said about Kamala Harris, or again, in the Republican side, Nikki Haley, Secretary of State, possibly, something like that. What might it be a good match for him? Any ideas?
It's hard to say. You know, it's hard to judge this far ahead, but I think he certainly has ability and talent, yes.
So we shall see. And again, we talk about Nikki Haley as someone who is still young, she's in her 40s, has aspirations of being president or vice president or going back into the cabinet. But right now, she's just kind of chilling out and watching the festivities. And certainly there are quite a bit of festivities to watch. Adam Lepp here on a finer mid-morning coffee break with my co-host, brother in broadcasting, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, discussing the major news events of the last few days. The Iranian situation, obviously, the big one. Some transition in the Democratic presidential race that Mayor Pete is now Pete the Private Citizen, no longer the mayor of South Bend, but I think he has his eyes on bigger and better things. Castro also no longer a Democratic candidate, but we seem to agree that if our next president is a Democrat, he will find himself in a cabinet position, if not nominated as a running mate. You write on the day after New Year's Day, Ron, in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, something else we've touched on a couple times, major changes in Electoral College coming after census figures in 2020 and reappropriation of seats in the House in 2022 and thereafter. Among the big winners will be, where you hang your hat, Florida, plus Texas, as they gain population. Gaining one seat will be Arizona, North Carolina, Montana, Oregon, and Colorado. Now, Montana's a big one because it's one of those states where there's only one representative and three electoral votes. Now, we do have many people moving to the mountain states. Montana, a sparsely populated state, huge in area, and it could hold tens of millions of people. But it kind of retains its Wild West image. But people do move there, and it's slowly growing, and we're seeing possibly an additional electoral vote. It's only one vote, only one additional rep. But going from one representative to the whole state to two, the same number as you have in senators, that's a pretty big step. And
yeah, I was going to say Montana has gone from one to two to one back to two now. They, over different decades, they lost a seat, they gained a seat, they lost a seat, now they're going to gain a seat again, all because of population changes.
Plus, we have Montana person Steve Bullock as a former presidential contender, somebody we both like, and I think that will add some visibility to him and other people who are from the mountain states. Now, 10 states that will lose one seat, interestingly, except for Kentucky. This includes Ohio and every state that borders Ohio. Not Indiana, not Kentucky, but everybody else. West Virginia, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, all losing one seat. Now, let's focus on Ohio because that's the state that I know a lot about for obvious reasons. We talk about Ohio not having all that many electoral votes, but it seems like whatever happens in Ohio is what's going to happen nationally. That is, if you win Ohio, you win the presidency. If you don't win Ohio, you have to go back to your home state and find a new job because you're not going to be president. And we saw that with the last two elections. As I've said, I expected Donald Trump to win Ohio, but when I found out he won Ohio by a big margin, I knew that the election had come to a conclusion, which it had. So, Ron, with Ohio losing one electoral vote, are we still going to have a big impact on the election? Or am I over-dramatizing by saying that as Ohio goes, the nation goes?
Well, it's not going to affect 2020. 2020 will be the same. It will be 2024 that the number of electoral votes will go down. So it won't affect the next election, but it will in 2024 and 2028, because reapportionment doesn't take place until after the census figures come in. So, but in 2024 and 2028, I think it could have a dramatic effect, the changes in electoral votes. If Texas goes blue, as I did in another article this week, and it could very well go blue by 2024, even maybe this time, but by 2024, and they have three more electoral votes, 41, then the Republicans can now win the White House. It's impossible if they lose Texas and California. How could they? And New York. So Texas is crucial. If it does not stay Republican, then the Republicans are in real trouble.
So this could be the last presidential election where Ohio has such a big impact, as we lose another vote.
It could be.
it'll certainly be important. I'm not going to discount that, but it'll be a little less important as we...
But imagine California is going to lose a seat for the very first time. They've always gained seats. That's amazing.
Yeah, but California has so many, the relative effect is certainly smaller. But we are seeing some increases.
5 electoral votes out of 54 in 2024.
Yeah. But we're seeing increases in the mountain states and parts of the South. And how that will affect the presidential vote remains to be seen. But I think we can agree this may be the last election for a while where Ohio has such a huge impact, especially...
And the Midwest in general, because Illinois and Michigan and Minnesota are also losing seats. So that means that Midwest will be somewhat less important than it has been.
Yeah, but interestingly, Indiana is not included in the states that are losing votes, and Indiana obviously has a tremendous impact on this coming election. We have the current vice president from Indiana and the possible Democratic presidential nominee from Indiana, who, of course,
or vice presidential.
Or the vice presidential nominee.
Or vice presidential, he could be. And then have been from Indiana, yeah.
And so sometimes as these states go, that's how the entire nation goes. The bottom line is, Ron, next time we talk, we'll be 1 week closer to the Iowa caucuses, and we're talking just days at this point. And once the bell rings and the caucus votes are counted, all you know what is going to break loose. Is that Pete and his supporters are pretty sure that they've won, but some polls show that the hair sniffer, Joe Biden, is going to roll to victory. Whatever happens, that will certainly affect...
Maybe Klobuchar could she's next to a minister, she could pull a win out also. It could be anything. Even Bernie could win it. Anything could happen now. In fact, Bernie has gone up in polls, indicating he has a better shot of being the nominee now, according to many articles I've read.
All I can say is let's hope that that doesn't happen. Between Pete, Amy, and Joe, I have favorable opinions about all of them. I would say Amy's my favorite, but whether she could beat Trump is questionable. I think I can confidently say that Old Reliable, with an emphasis on old, Mr. Biden, will become the victor and will be running against Donald Trump in the November election. But we shall see. I'm not going to be placing any big bets on this because even I'm not totally sure. What I can be sure of, Ron, is that there will be a lot of surprises and lots of fodder for us to ponder in our future programs. Well, as my mama always said, time flies when you are having fun. It is about time for us to conclude this program. We really appreciate you joining us again in 2020, Ron. More great discussions, things to conjecture, and let's just hope that the world can stay at peace.
Happy New Year, everybody listening.
I mean, peace is something which has no political party, no age, no race, no income. Let's try to work together to make the world a better place. And we have differences, but let's try to address these differences in a mature, appropriate fashion. Anything you'd like to add, Ron, about my wishes regarding the Iranian situation, how our listeners can digest what's going on, anything that you can contribute to that?
Let's just hope that we can all somehow pray, even if you're not religious, and hope that somehow we can have diplomacy work this out. I don't know how, though, because, I mean, if we had been attacked in this way, we would be responding, as we did after 9/11. So to expect Iran to do nothing is, I think, unbelievable. You can't expect they're not going to react in some way after what we did. And this is to them a 9/11 for them. So, unfortunately, there is going to be a reaction, but I hope it's not as great, as much damage as it could be, but it could be anything.
That's the best way. We are, the greatest country in the world, and people have their differences. So let's try to address those differences and work for peace. Understand that we're all human beings. We really should be on the same team. And we'll close it at that, Ron. Thank you again for joining us on a fine-er mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. We will talk to you again soon. We invite listeners, send me an email. Of course, visit Ron's website, theprogressiveprofessor.com. Look him up on Facebook, The Progressive Professor. And send me an email. Do you like the show? Do you not like the show? What is your opinion, question, comment, suggestion, complaint? They're all welcome. Adam at WWGH. 1071.com.